This week's guest is American bassist David Pastorius. Known for his unique sound and playing style, David comes from a very well-known and musical family, of course, given the last name. However, David's journey to finding the bass was actually completely unrelated, and he has now built a very successful career of his own, working as an instructor and gigging with his band, Local 518. There is a lot to learn and be inspired by in this episode, so I really hope you all enjoy it. So normally the first question on this podcast, and I like to give people listening and watching just some context, and it's nice to hear kind of like people's like origin story. So how did you get into playing bass? What was the background with all of that?
It's funny. I really didn't even know. I didn't pay too much attention to bass, even though Jaco and all this and the family. Mm-hmm. But I knew I had an uncle that played music, and I knew he played bass, but I was one of those people that wait, which one's the bass? Is that the one with the four strings or the six strings?
Yeah.
That's about as much as I knew. So when I was like 15, one day after school, I went to my buddy Sam's house, and he pulled out this, he had this like first act Sears bass guitar, and he started playing the Chili Peppers version of Higher Ground. And I heard that, and that's when I was like, dude, what instrument is that? And he's like, that's a bass, you dummy. That's what your uncle played. And I was like, that's what he played? And he's like, yeah. So that's pretty much how I got into it, because it was more through Flea and my friend Sam.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I was hooked at that, you know?
Yeah. Do people assume that it was because of Jaco that you got into bass all the time?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's pretty natural, though. You know, it's like, yeah. I understand. But no, I mean, you'd think that Jaco passed away when I was 10. I didn't start until I was 15, so yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Was there any other instrument that you, do you play any other instruments?
Nothing that I would consider myself like I'm also this or that. I mean, I dabble on a guitar a little bit, but I would never, you're never going to catch me playing guitar at a gig.
yeah.
What is it? I know at one point my band, I have a band, Local 518, and our second album, most of it I actually ended up writing on this little toy ukulele guitar that my daughter had at the time.
Wow.
I don't play it. I just, I don't know. You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying?
Yeah. I feel like that's so relatable.
I don't consider myself a guitarist. I'm a bass
player. Yeah, a lot. Yeah. I'd say the same. I started on guitar, but I was never really any, I was never really any good at it though. And then I picked up bass and I was like, yeah, this is the one for me. Like, cool. I wouldn't play guitar at a gig. I wouldn't feel comfortable playing guitar at a gig, but I play it from time to time. So at the beginning, what was your practice routine like? Did you really have one?
I just played a lot. You know what I mean? Like at first probably 2 years, I was putting in probably 4 or 5 hours a day because I just loved, that's all I wanted to do, you know?
Yeah.
When I was 15, just like, you know, go to the store, get Guitar Player magazine, look at tablature, and learn songs on the, you know, from bands I like.
Mm-hmm.
Red Hot Chili Peppers, Primus, Faith No More, all bands like that. That's kind of what I was digging into.
Yeah, that's so relatable to me as well, and that's what I say to everyone when they first like try to start playing, because everyone's like, oh, how many hours did you put into playing a day? I'm like, honestly, I couldn't give you a number, because I was just playing. Like, I was just learning songs that I liked, and that's literally all I was doing. Like, yeah. I didn't sit down and say, I'm going to play for 3 hours. It's just something that happened.
Exactly. No, that's why I tell people, when people talk about, oh, you have talent for this, talent for that. And maybe there's a such thing as talent on a certain level, but for the most part, I don't really buy the talent thing. I think it's like you're born with maybe a certain amount of love for something. If you love doing it, you're just going to put the time in, and you know, no matter if you put the same amount of time into anything, you're going to get pretty damn good at it.
Yeah, exactly. You know? It's just like the way things work. I feel like some people have more of a natural ability when it comes to rhythm and stuff, but even then it's not something substantial enough to say, you're just so incredibly naturally talented. I think it takes away from the amount of hours that they would have put in, and it's hard to put a number on, I played X amount a week and this is why I'm here. Like, you can't. Like, if you love playing an instrument enough, it just happens, and I don't think you can put a number on, I paid this much to get here.
Exactly. Yeah, it's like if you love playing a certain sport and you're out there practicing all the time, you're going to get pretty good. You know? Just like anything.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from that, I think I might know what your answer is to this then. Do you think that it's important to be super disciplined with your practice and intentional with what you're practicing?
It's funny. I can say that maybe, but also at the same time, I'm not one to talk because I'm not super disciplined mm-hmm. with my practicing. I pretty much, you know, I practice sometimes, but most times I'm just picking up the bass and trying to come up with certain things or, you know, yeah. this or that. Or come up with new ideas when really, you know, it's funny. Just this last year, I started really delving into more theory, like learning my yeah. modes and learning, you know, practicing that stuff. But mm-hmm. and it helps. But it's still, it's like, I don't know. I spend more time on the bass, playing the bass than practicing the bass. But there's a time yeah. for both. And yeah, you know, hats off to the people that are disciplined.
Yeah. No, it's so cool to hear you say that. And I'm a little bit in shock because I think from outside perspective, when you see such an incredible player like you, you just assume that they have such, I'm not saying that you don't, but like such an amazing understanding of theory and that you'd assume that they're super disciplined to get to where they are. So to hear you say that is like really cool.
Yeah, for me, it was more like when I give lessons to people at first, I'm like, they're like, what should I start with? And I'm like, you know, there's the basics, you know, each string, getting used to doing that. But I mean, honestly, I say mm-hmm. just try to have fun on the instrument and yep. make noises and get noises out of the thing, you know? But mm-hmm. at the end of the day, the most important thing I think you're going to have is your own sound. That's what you want to strive for, you know?
So, yeah.
But yeah, no, I definitely should practice more, but I can't say I really do. I gig a lot. I play a lot of gigs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And as far as theory, like I probably know more than I think I know. I just don't know the names of everything I'm doing sometimes.
Yeah, no, it's really funny you say that because both you and I did a podcast, I think it was it the third episode with Giacomo Turo, who's an Italian guitarist, uh-huh. and he said the exact same thing. Like, he's like, I probably do know everything, but I don't put names to the scales. I've just spent so much time.
Yeah.
Like, he has an incredibly unique sound too, and he just spent all of his time basically just playing.
Yeah.
And he's like, I couldn't really tell you what I'm playing, but I know what I'm playing, but I don't know the words and stuff behind it. So
exactly.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you two probably have common ground on that. Even for me as well.
Yeah.
Like I'd say at the beginning, I was not intentional or disciplined with my practice. Even now I struggle to be disciplined, but I feel like I've gotten to the point now where theory, like you, to get better, I have to be more disciplined, but that's at this point, not at the beginning. At the beginning, it was never, I need to be learning the major and minor scales and knowing what modes and when to use them and all of that. Like, wasn't even thinking about it. But now at this point in my, like, quote unquote career, I think is the time where I'm trying to be more disciplined about it and, like you, dive into the theory.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I mean, you're doing the right, you sound killer. Your playing's great. So, and how long you been playing?
Not crazy long. So I learned guitar for about 6 years. I think I was 13. And then when we went into lockdown, I was just bored out of my mind and I started playing guitar and I was like, I want to learn another instrument. What instrument could I learn? And then it's that thing of, oh, bass sounds easy, got less strings, must be so easy. Yeah. So in lockdown of 2020, I brought my first bass.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
You've been playing for what, 3 years now?
Yeah. Awesome. I actually uploaded a video recently of like showing my progress because I'm so thankful I did. I was recording myself learning my first few songs.
Nice.
So there's a video of that on my Instagram. People are really inspired by it.
That's really cool. Yeah, you sound great though. So yeah, keep doing whatever you're doing. You know what to do.
Thank you. I mean, this was a question that I was going to ask you later on, but like imposter syndrome for me, because it's only been 3 years, is such a massive thing. I'm like, there's moments where I'm like,
you mean like, I saw that when you say imposter syndrome, what do you mean? Like feeling like people don't think you deserve to be playing or whatever or something?
Yeah, kind of like when you think you don't know enough to be saying or doing what you're doing, or you're not qualified enough, or there's moments where, I don't know, I guess a lot of it's self-doubt. I don't know. Some people don't really struggle with it at
yeah.
all. But for me, knowing that it's only been 3 years and having other people say, wow, oh my God, that's such a short amount of time. I'm like, I know. But then I don't know. There's something, a part of me, I'm like, am I equipped and experienced yeah. enough to be doing and saying the things that I'm doing is like a constant thing for me.
No, you should be happy with it. You shouldn't stress that at all ever. That shouldn't even be a thing in your mind. I mean, and if anyone's really gonna like, you know, I know there's jaded asshole musicians out there, but mm-hmm. I could care less. Just get my name right when you're talking about me. That's all I ask. You know what I mean? So it's all, yeah. all it is just, I don't know. I wouldn't worry about it. People can always have their opinion. It's funny because in the internet now, you'll have people like, I've never went out of my way to write a bad comment to anybody on their plan. I just don't understand mm-hmm. it. I don't know why people would ever do that. Like, I have opinions. I may not like this or not that, but now we live in this world where you can just go online and say some snarky comment.
Yeah. People love to do it.
I've had people say that to me, and I'm like, you would never come to my gig after I jump off stage and be like, by the way, you're da 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 da. They just don't do that. So it's so weird. But yeah, so honestly, it's funny. But when people have negative comments about me, like if I put a post and there's a mm-hmm. negative comment, I almost get excited because it gets so much more traction. Everyone wants to watch it, and they go back and forth, and it's kind of funny. I think people do it on purpose too sometimes for their own posts. Like hire a shit talker.
Yeah.
Just to make their posts more popular.
No, that's actually a thing. I think people will like say or do something controversial or like put like an Easter egg is a weird way to say it, but they'll like purposely do some and say something wrong just for like the engagement of it. I mean, I'm not confident enough to try and do that, but that's actually a thing.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as the, I guess, imposter syndrome, yeah, I wouldn't worry about that because, I mean, you're obviously, you play, because as a bass player too, I mean, you're playing in time, you're playing good, it's that's really, but I don't know, you know, I guess maybe some people have more of a fear of that. I've never had it though, really.
Well, that's like super, like good. So is there not a moment that you pinpoint where you're like, oh, I felt in that moment that I wasn't good enough? Is there not a moment that you look back?
There's been a couple moments like that, but they're kind of fleeting. I remember years ago, there was a Jocko Big Band, mm-hmm. Peter Graves Orchestra. They released an album where they did all Jocko's tunes. It was Jocko's Big Band. They got together to redo his songs, but with guest bass players. And I got invited to go do it, and I remember showing up there. And it was a song called Opus Pocus. So I learned it already. But when I got to rehearsal, these are like serious players. And especially me having the last name. And I know what they're all thinking, which is true. You only got called because you're Jocko's nephew. But I know it. I don't care. But I know that too. I'm like, whatever. It doesn't bother me. But so I was dealing with that. And he put this sheet music in front of me. And I told Peter Graves, I was like, that's like, you might as well put Russian in front of me or Chinese. I don't read that. I was like, I'll just, you know, I kind of learned it. So, and a lot of those musicians, I don't, sometimes I felt like maybe they were, felt like they were, you know, like they're better than because they're, you know, mm-hmm. you have musicians that can sight read. So whatever. I don't let it get to me too much, but that would be the closest I felt nervous or shy.
Okay. That's really interesting. I mean, you mentioned it a little bit there about having a name. And it's really good that it just doesn't bother you and you own it. But was there ever a point that it bothered you that people were putting these assumptions on you because of it?
I mean, sometimes the only time it really bothers me is if I get introduced as not even by my name as Jocko. Mm-hmm. Then I'm like that. I was like, why do you do that? See, honestly, I don't really care if it's a two-edged sword, though, believe it or not. I mean, it goes both ways. But like I've been playing with Pat Travers now for like 6 years, and he's always super cool about it because he announces my name at the end of the night and doesn't say anything with it. The cool thing about Pastorius, it's a rare enough name that you hear that name and you're like,
you'll know.
You don't need to say it because they're going to come up and ask me. I always say if they know after they hear me play that they're way more receptive. But if they find mm-hmm. out prior, their arms are crossed and they're like, who's this guy think he is?
Yeah.
So.
No, that's such a great point. And obviously, they would recognize the name and they'd be inclined themselves to do their own research. It's, you don't necessarily
not like
always
Smith
have
Jackson,
to.
Smith or Jackson, you know what I mean? It's more of an odd name.
Yeah. So how would you say that Jocko's legacy, if or hasn't, influenced your own musical career? Do you feel like you've taken much influence from that?
It's funny because at first, like I told you, at first it had 100% nothing to do with Jocko starting the band.
Yeah.
But of course, I got into Jocko after I started playing bass. I delved back and listened to a lot of his stuff. And there's definitely an influence on me. He definitely mm-hmm. influenced me big time because he's one of the greats. But the thing about Jocko that people that don't notice as much is even beyond his playing was his songwriting ability. He was a real deal songwriter. Yeah. That was his biggest strength. So he's definitely influenced me. It's funny though, because I barely know any Jocko stuff.
That's really funny, actually. Yeah.
I know how to play like the Chicken, but even when I play the Chicken, I play my version of it. I just follow the changes and play it my way.
Uh-huh. Which I feel like you should do anyway.
Absolutely. You know, with the bat, 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 you got to play that. Play the head guard. Kuru, I know that. But even that, I know bits and parts. Mm. So I've never really sat down and learned a bunch of Jocko tunes. The only one I ever had to learn was Opus Pocus.
Yeah, from that time you mentioned.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any other career in mind when you were younger? Or did you, as soon as you picked up the bass, did you know that this is something that I want to do?
I'm glad I picked up the bass in a way. All I can think of, I know right before bass, I was really, my Uncle Jim, he was like 6 years older than me, and he was in the Marines, and I thought mm-hmm. he was like the coolest dude ever. So I was really gung-ho about wanting to do Marines. But it's funny that, I picked up the bass, and that was all I wanted to do after that. It's just music, music, music. So wow. I'm kind of glad it went that way.
Yeah. So if you hadn't, you can't think of anything. Like, if you had to imagine a life where you didn't find the bass, can you guess what career you'd be in right now?
Probably the same one I'll be in if something happens now. I don't know. It'd probably be nothing too fancy.
Yeah. But,
I don't know. Sweeping floors somewhere.
Just getting by.
Yeah, just getting by. Yeah. I don't know. Mowing lawns.
Yeah, maybe.
Something like that. And I've done stuff like that, like, you know, like daily work pay here and there stuff, mm-hmm. which is cool. But yeah.
Yeah, was that when you were younger?
No, I still do now sometimes. Occasionally.
Oh, nice.
You know, whenever there's gigs ain't happening, because sometimes gigs uh-huh. aren't happening. You got to do what you got
to
do.
Damn. Lessons, see, that.
Honestly, though, lessons have helped me a lot, though, too, though, lately.
Yeah. Oh, the lessons you're doing, is it online mostly that you're doing
them? Yeah, I do most of my lessons online, yep.
What's that like for you? Do you prefer doing them online than in person?
It's weird because I honestly, I'm cool with doing lessons in person, and I still do them in person. But mm-hmm. just generally speaking, for the most part, I feel like the people that are willing to send you money over Venmo or Cash App, you know what I mean, online, are more serious about wanting to learn.
Yeah.
As opposed to like when I used to teach out of a store, and I felt like a lot of parents were just dropping off their kids to be babysat for a half hour. You could tell, and it's fine. You could tell they didn't really want to be there or play, but it's very rare that someone pays me money, gets on, and they just sit there like they don't want to be there.
Mm.
I feel like it's way more fun doing lessons online. And it's not because it's online. It's just because of the, you know what I mean? You're kind of like weeding out the people that aren't as serious by that.
Yeah, that's such a great point. I didn't even think about that, because the average person isn't going to go through the whole effort of researching to find somebody online. Like you said, Venmo them money.
Yeah, if they're doing that, they want to learn.
That's crazy. Yep. So do you teach students quite consistently then? What do you say your split is right now between like gigs and other stuff that you do?
It depends on the month. It's funny, I know we've had a couple dead months with Pat, but that's going to be picking up like crazy here in the next few months. But average, I would say, you know, gigs would be like 70%.
Yeah.
Maybe lessons would be 30, you know. But I would like to get busy with lessons too, though.
Oh, is that one of your priorities right now, is taking up lessons?
And you know, it's funny you said that, because you were just talking about imposter syndrome. That I didn't even think of that. When it comes to teaching lessons, I feel a little bit like I'm, you know what I mean? Like I don't deserve to be teaching lessons to people sometimes. Or when I used
That's
to
pay, really...
It's funny, I'm just remembering that. Or when I do clinics sometimes, because it's the same kind of thing. But lately, in the past couple of years, I've become way more comfortable with that. You
That's
know?
Really interesting. I'm glad you said that, actually. That's really interesting. So there's times where you feel like, I don't want to say not good enough to teach, but like are a little bit like, you know.
A lot of times I tell these kids, I just tell people now online, I'm like, this is what I do. Like I focus on a lot of technique. That I'm not really, mm-hmm. I feel pretty good about technique, but I'll say there's cats that I give lessons to that blow me out of the water with theory. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like they're coming to me more for the technique thing. And then there's people that are just starting that I can help them with both. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm no theory master. So that used to make me feel like an imposter.
Yeah, no, I completely get that. And it did me as well. And I think the way to combat that, and you literally just touched on it, but like as an instructor who teaches bass lessons online, it's so important to be very transparent in what your strengths and your weaknesses are.
Oh, when absolutely. Accepting, makes life
easier. Yeah, exactly. Because even when I was accepting students, like I really wanted to make sure that they knew that I started learning in 2020. And you know, just because I don't have like a actual music qualification, there are still things that you can learn from me. Like there's things you can learn from me and things that they can go to you to learn from you. Like, yeah,
I
a lot of people.
I tell people all the time, I say, I've given lessons to kids that have been playing for like 2 weeks and they play something. I'm like, what was that?
Yeah, exactly.
You can learn from anybody. Anybody can. We can all teach each other. That's why when people ask me, did you take lessons? And I'm like, well, yeah, because I learn from everybody. I watch play online or I watch play. You learn from everybody. But as far as like, you know, structured lessons with a teacher, no, I pretty much was self-taught.
Yeah. Oh, that's really interesting.
But when you said, when you said, yeah, that's the best thing to do is to let people know up front. Because when I used to do, I did a few clinics when I was younger. I was so, my focus was don't let them know that I don't know this. Don't let them. Now my focus is, I come right out and say, hey, blah, 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 blah. And it just takes all the pressure off. People get a laugh out of it sometimes when they know how little I know about certain things. And, you know, it kind of like makes it easier on other people because they're there for a reason. They obviously think you can play.
Yeah, exactly. Complete transparency is like always the way to go. And a lot of times, like, although people will assume that you know more things than you do, but then when you are open about it and you tell them, it's actually quite inspiring, realizing that actually they've got to this level. Maybe they don't read music, or maybe they're not as strong in as theory as you thought. And that in itself is like, is very, very inspiring and is more of a reason actually to want to have them teach you.
Mm-hmm.
But that's also something that I struggled with actually taking up students, because my journey with bass, and it's going to sound so like philosophical and weird, but it was like such a personal learning journey for me that when I first started taking up students and they'd ask me, oh, like, how do you do this? Or like, you know, why is your grooves as good as it is? And I'm like, it was really difficult for me to give them an answer, but just because of how personal my music journey was. And
yeah.
It's like it was my thing, and I don't know, that was one thing when I first started teaching people, I really struggled knowing how to communicate how to do the things I was doing, just because it was just something that was super personal that I don't feel like I could have put into words, if that makes sense.
No, it completely makes sense. Like I have people ask me the same kind of things with certain things, and I'll be like, I don't really know how to answer you. I mean, just picking up the bass, putting time in and playing. Play to a metronome, but that's not really what they want to hear either. I'm just like, I mean,
no,
but I can't really tell you, you know what I mean? So yeah,
uh-huh.
I don't know. It's but the one thing I like, as far as like text, people learning your style or what you do, I always tell people I was kind of blessed with a short attention span, believe it or not. It's positive for me, because like I've been big fans of like Victor Wooten, Les Claypool, and I got buddies of mine that can play this Victor Wooten song perfectly, Les Claypool song, or whatever. It sounds exactly like it. I have always had about enough attention span to get the gist of what they're doing and take it and apply it my way. And then I get kind of bored with it, and I'm like, I'm going to use that and kind of create with it. And that's kind of come up with my sound, you know, where a lot of people, I feel like, you know, they struggle with finding their sound. So that's like what you go back to with being personal.
Yeah, exactly. I really struggle to like put it into words, but it's such a personal thing that it's hard when it comes to trying to teach someone how to do what you do.
Yep.
You can't really. Like, I mean, you probably could, but it's really, really difficult.
Yeah.
Going back to what you just said about Victor Wooten, I was watching one of your YouTube videos on your like techniques, and it's bass scratching, you call it, isn't it? That was taken from, that was inspired by Victor,
pretty
wasn't
much
it?
Yeah, it's funny, I got my bass right here, I can play, I can show you, bro, if you, I can explain it if you want
to. Go for it. Yeah, please.
I saw Victor Wooten doing this thing with it, and he hit the string off the neck on accident, so I just started taking like these two fingers and just going and then making like a bass line where I'd be like, then do double.
It's so cool.
Something like that.
That's insanely cool. Like, I've never seen anyone do that before, and I feel like it's so hard. I mean, it feels so intimidating to think about trying to come up with something that's someone's never done on the bass before, because there's so many incredible people doing just incredible things.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's people, yeah. I'm sure there's people that do something similar to it. I know, but you know John Ferreira?
Yeah, I do.
Have you had him on your show?
I haven't. I was literally thinking yesterday about messaging him.
Dude, that guy is absolutely insane. And he'd be one of my big inspirations too. And it's funny because I only heard about him in the last maybe 3 years. But he's definitely
really.
Yeah, he's got so many crazy techniques like that and stuff too. Yeah, get him on your
show. I know exactly. Yeah, I have him on Instagram, and it's really funny. I was thinking about yesterday of like who else I'd want to message, and he was definitely one of them.
What about Cody Wright?
Yeah, I think I have Cody on Instagram too. Yeah, actually,
Cody. Those are two of my favorites. Cody is just so like melodic, and like he's one of the guys that I've listened to that I've been like, dude, you got to start learning more about modes, and you know what I mean, and more because I've always had the rhythmic technique part down for soloing, but like I want to learn how to say more with playing less.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And he has all that down.
I totally get what you mean.
Plus, he can riff out like anybody, too. Like, he's got crazy technique.
He's not crazy active on his Instagram, or is he? And I'm completely missing it.
I mean, maybe he's more on the Facebook thing. I'm not sure. But, yeah, he's super cool dude. He's a good dude.
Yeah. I'm gonna message both of them and see if they'll be down to be on, because that'll be really cool.
Definitely.
Yeah, John's playing is just incredible. Like, every time he posts a video, I'm like, what? Yeah,
he's one of those guys I watch, and I'm like, get out of here. I don't want to watch you anymore.
You just skip past the video because it makes you feel like, damn, I've got to be better.
Yeah.
No, but that's really funny.
The little bit I've talked with him, he seems like such a down-to-earth, nice guy. Very, very cool guy.
Yeah.
Most of those guys are, though.
Yeah. I've found that. I haven't come across any musicians, or I see specific to the bass community since starting this podcast, everyone is so, I'm not saying bass players are like amazing, I mean we kind of are, but everyone's just so accepting and, you know, has their own thing going on and is super sociable and nice and supportive. I can imagine John's the exact same, and Cody.
Very cool.
But yeah, no, I love that. I've not come across anyone really specific to the bass community that's one of those toxic musician people.
Oh, they're out there. You just probably they're probably the ones that can't play as well sometimes. I don't know. It just seems like
It sounds like you've got so many stories of like these people.
I've had a few. No one like really known. It's usually the people that are just really jaded and I don't know. They're just angry about something. So
yeah, you're so right. It's always anger.
Yeah. Which I don't get. I just don't get like I said again, I don't get ever doing that. Like going on and like trying to bash someone for what they're doing is just dumb.
No, I think you have a choice, and you can choose to be inspired or you can choose to be jealous and bitter. Yeah. And the people who are making mean comments or like other problematic musicians are the ones that are more inclined to be bitter about other people's progress.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You got a lot of sometimes when I was younger, the older guys, a lot of those, you'd have the really cool ones that were accepting and adaptable, and then you'd have the old ones that are just jaded. And if you act like that, you're going to get swallowed by people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's why, like, you know, some people like to talk about these young kids that, oh, they got YouTube. And I'm like, dude, they have to put in the same amount of work still. Yes, it is cool to have that, but you have YouTube too. You can still look at it now and continue learning.
Yeah.
It's like, you just got to keep up and get swallowed, man.
100%. Ian said the exact same thing. And I kind of understand their point of view, but I also don't, because like you said, they have access to YouTube too. Like, if you really wanted to, you could learn how to upload videos. If you really wanted to, you could learn how to build an Instagram page.
Yeah.
Like, their bitterness really isn't justified.
And the thing is, though,
justified.
It's awesome, though, because there's so much there is. If you look for it, there's so much incredible music out there now. And it's great. Like, I mean, I want to see these crazy young kids, you know what I mean, still keep amazing us. That's awesome. So I mean, you literally have people get mad about it, like it's some kind of sport. Like, oh, it's unfair. It's like, no, man, they're putting in the same hours. They're putting in the same amount of hours you have to. So it's like, I don't know. And like I said, we all have that opportunity now.
Yeah, exactly. And I can understand sometimes you're in a little bit of a weird headspace and it gets disheartening seeing how incredible one person is. But again, you make a choice to be inspired by that instead of being really bitter about it. And the people who choose to be bitter, that just is a reflection of them as people.
Not only that, you also got to remember there's no such thing as better or worse because it's all completely subjective. So, you know, you just want to be the best version of you you can be musically. And if you're out there playing gigs and playing solid and making people happy, then you're doing exactly everything you need to be doing. And that's it.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. I think I remember you mentioning that you have a daughter. Is that right?
I have five kids, and I have five kids and a stepdaughter.
Oh my goodness! That's crazy.
Actually, my youngest daughter's birthday today.
Oh, happy birthday to her! How old is she?
Avery, she's turning 12 years old.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's crazy. Have any of them showed any interest or have any of them been inspired by you to want to get into music, or are they living their own
crazy
lives?
I see musical ability in all five of my kids, but the ones that I think are really the most would be my youngest son. His name's Nikoa. He's seven. Avery sings, and she sings really good. My son Alex, he's 14. He plays bass a little bit. He plays more sports, but every time he picks up my bass, he just looks so natural and plays. I'm like, dude, why don't you practice more?
Yeah.
He's like, eh.
He might do in a few years.
Like, you never want to force that on anybody. Just like if they want to do it, they want to do it. If they don't, they're probably better off. They're probably better off just finding a real job. I don't know.
That is hilarious. But
So, and my oldest, Hannah, she's 21. Or she's going to be 21 this year.
Oh, nice.
Oldest. But, she's not. Uh-huh. She's really into music, and she doesn't really play anything, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say my sons, probably the most. Heidi, that's my other daughter. She shows some musical promise too. But yeah.
Oh, I love that. And you don't push them into doing anything.
You're
letting them live their lives. Yeah.
Not at all. They're gonna do it.
Yeah. There's no reason to ever push them, because if they're not interested, they're not interested.
Exactly. And there's tons of other awesome careers they can have and do things they want to do. You know what I mean? It's all what they want to do. So
working in the music industry, do you ever struggle? Like, what's that like, maintaining being a father and working in the industry at the same time? Is it not an issue, or?
You mean as far as like being gone sometimes or this or that?
Yeah. The dynamic really interests me because
it's kind of cool. The situation.
Obviously, I don't have kids.
Yeah, no, the situation I'm in now with, I play with Pat Travers. We don't really go out for super long stretches. So it's actually kind of like sometimes you'll leave on like Thursday and come back like Sunday or Monday. And you go out and play three shows, come home for the week. And that's when we're busy, you know, and then there's times when you're just off. But yeah, so it's kind of, it kind of works out pretty easy, you know?
Yeah, I can imagine. So I guess it'd just be like you're away for a little bit.
I've done the tour.
And then also...
I toured with I played prior to Pat, I played for a guy, for a rap guy named Tech N9ne for like 2 years. And I remember we did a tour that was 60 shows in 63 days on a tour bus.
Damn.
And that was, you know, it was still all right. It was cool. I mean, you just, especially nowadays, we got these little phone gadgets. It's so much easier to touch. I mean,
phones are great.
Call, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, that's right. I guess also you make up for it for the time you spend when you are at home. Like, you're not constantly away.
Yeah.
There will be moments where you're at home all the time.
Exactly.
Like, you know, you teach lessons, so you'd be more available.
Absolutely.
No, that's very interesting. I feel like that point of view is a little more outdated now, where you say, oh, musicians, you know, don't have time for their family because, like you say, you've got phones. And then on the other hand, when you are home, you're home for a long time.
Yeah.
So
it's all kind of up to you a little bit.
So what's your creative process like when it comes to writing new music? I know we've talked about bass scratching a little bit, and that was kind of inspired by the things that you see and the attention span, which is super, super interesting and makes a lot of sense, not having enough attention span to like It's really funny.
I would say it's weird, like, as far as writing, I can't really, there's nothing that deep or profound about it. A lot of times, I it's crazy. Like, sometimes I'll hear things and, you know, come up with it, go from there and learn it on my bass and then whatever. And sometimes you stumble across things by accident, just playing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or, like, sometimes I'll literally look at, like, a pattern on my bass before I play it and be like, that pattern looks like that might sound cool. Let's hear what it sounds like. I don't know. Things like that, too.
That's cool.
Yeah, like,
I might try that later. I'll sit on my bed and stare at my bass and be like, what pattern should I try?
And I like chord changes.
No, that's really cool.
You know, chord changes are cool. So I mess around with a lot of chords. But, yeah, sometimes it just comes naturally. Sometimes you kind of, like, have to, like, play until you run across something that sounds cool on accident.
Yeah. No, I think a lot of great things come from things being totally accidental. And this is another thing I've said to my students is, like, you've got to not be scared of, like, messing up. Like, you just got to be okay with trying and experimenting. And that if you're not, that's really going to stunt your progress. Being okay with, like, trying new things.
Well, yeah, that's why my style of playing, it's like trial and error. That's what I've learned. Yeah. I've learned so much from, like, gigging out and playing and being like, you play this over this. Like, oh, that sounded horrible. Oh, that sounds good. Oh, that sounds cool. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, and improvising a lot. Getting a chance to play, just sit in and always improvising is good because there's nothing wrong with making a mistake on stage. It's going to be okay. People do get really scared of, like, making mistakes on stage. And it's just like, honestly, sometimes some of the most enjoyable parts of concerts I've been to have been when there's a little mess up or a mistake. Cause it's all entertainment, and it's all in how you can make it funny. That's why it's so cool playing with Pat, because Pat is such a he's so, like, laid back and chill. And, you know, we've been on stage, and, you know, cord can fall out of his whatever, anything happens. It's like no one really like writes home about, like, oh, they suck because of this or that. They're just like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's more of a human trait, and it makes you more likable to see that you're okay with messing up, especially on stage. Like, I feel like a lot of people, again, feel so much pressure to be perfect. So it's probably. Do you think the audience is that something that you feel like the audiences definitely pick up, or do you think it's more of an inside thing?
I think they pick up more than they really do. You know what I mean? It's funny.
Yeah, probably.
Now we can listen to basically every performance we have by the time we get home, because someone's recorded it. So you're listening on the ride home to the hotel after the gig. You're already hearing yourself on stage, and you because it's fresh in your head, and you'll know. That's the thing. Like, when you listen to something right away, like if you play a part, when you're in playing the part right there, you're aware of every little idiosyncrasy or every mistake you might have made. But if you wait a day to listen back, you've forgotten every little thing, and then you're listening more as a listener.
Yeah.
And you don't hear, hear like, oh, I don't really hear much, because you're not focused on.
Yeah, it's
you're
so
not
true.
Looking for it. But
yeah.
But yeah, so. But as far as that, yeah, that's why I try to, like, not listen to stuff right away.
Yeah, because your ear can really get compromised once you've, like, especially that's why people say it's really important to take breaks and come back to things. Like, if you're writing a new song or doing whatever, doesn't really matter what you're doing, but taking breaks to come back to it really, really, really helps, because you hear it so differently.
Sometimes the best practice is putting your bass down for, like, a week and doing something else.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then you come back with it with new stuff or new experiences, because it's like some people, I feel like they make their whatever their particular instrument or their music their most important thing alive. And me personally, that may work for them. I think it's a mistake for me, though. I can, you know, there's more important things out there. Music is amazing and I love it, but there's other shit out there.
No, I completely agree. So you wouldn't be the type of person to stress that, oh, I've not practiced in a week, I've been so busy, like, doing what X, Y, and Z with the kids. Like, you're not the type of person to stress about the fact that you haven't picked up the bass in practice.
No, because if you pick up, what's funny is, you know this, if you haven't picked up your bass for a week and you go in, like, your room and practice for, like, an hour, your chops are back.
Yeah.
They'll come back. You just practice, you know, it's like riding a bike. So it's like, I don't know. Some people are way more dedicated. Like, it goes back to the whole discipline and practicing thing. But, you know, I think I'm a little more laid back about all that. I'm not so worried about that.
Yeah, I find...
I think taking breaks makes you bring more to the instrument.
Oh, yeah, I agree. And also coming back from a break for me makes me realize how much I love bass in the first place. Because in that time, I mean, I guess subconsciously or maybe consciously, you forget how much you like playing bass. Maybe I haven't been able to play it in 2 weeks. And then I finally get to playing it. I'm like, oh, see, this is why I love doing what I do. And those breaks then make me more appreciative of the instrument, that's one of the coolest, as cringy as it sounds.
That was one of the coolest things Victor Wooten, you know, I'm stealing this from Victor Wooten, but I went to one of his clinics and he just said, he's like, it's called playing music.
Yeah.
If it's not happening or you're not really feeling it, put it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you're at a gig, then you got to finish the gig.
You just walk off mid gig.
But other than that, just put it down, go out, I don't know, go walk, go run, go whatever. Uh-huh. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I love that. I completely agree. Everything Victor says, I'm like, yep, mm-hmm. There's a video that goes around of him all the time where he's like, there's no wrong note. And he's just there, just like playing all the notes on the bass. Every video, I just love it. I just think, I think he's incredible. And there was one as well, he was talking about theory. I can't quote it directly, but he was saying the same thing along the lines of what you and I have been discussing about theory not being like the be all end all of everything.
Yeah, first time I met Victor Wooten, it was at a clinic he did in Orlando and I went to, and he brought me up to play and sit in, and I sat in and I felt like he kind of, like, I was younger, but he kind of like, I was probably trying to play a little more than I should have in front of him.
Understandable.
He was like basically stopped everything and basically was talking about how I was overplaying. So I was kind of embarrassed in front of this whole class of people.
Oh my god!
So for a while, I was kind of like, "Man, that guy's about him." But then I met him again, and honestly, realizing looking back, he was correct. Now I can look back at myself and realize he was 100% correct, and he's a nice guy. So he's like, "Yeah, you're just kind of being an idiot," which we're all capable of sometimes.
No, your feelings got hurt. Mine would have as well, and it would have taken me a moment.
I was so embarrassed. I was literally like up there, like shaking. I was so embarrassed. I was like, "Oh no." But the guy knows what he's talking about, and he is a really nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned, I learned from that moment too.
Yeah, you did. Even if you were a little butthurt to begin with, you learned a lot from it. Yeah, you have a cool story now though, because that is a really cool story.
Yeah,
Victor Wooten embarrassed me.
Yeah,
title of like a YouTube video.
He didn't need to embarrass me. He was just being honest.
No, yeah,
you know what I mean. And honestly, it's better than him not saying anything. You know, it was kind of cool because like, sometimes you need your brain shocked. Sometimes you need it to remember something.
Yeah, I'm sure he went about it a nice way. In a nice way as he could. Yeah.
Yeah, he did go back. Yeah, he did it nice. It's funny though. But there's a cool, that's not on the video, but if you go on YouTube, you can find the video of me playing with him. It's pretty neat.
Oh, yeah, I'll have to find it after this. Or I'll message you and be like, find me the link.
Yeah, I can send you the link.
No. Yeah, please. Yeah. That'd be really cool. No, I love that though. And it is important, like, if you're going to, I think this is relevant to the social media space as well, but if you're going to pull someone up on something or give them advice, it is very important in the way that you say it. Because otherwise, like for me, if someone's trying to give me advice and it's not in a very nice tone, or just, it so depends on the way that they go about something, on whether I'm going to be open in wanting to hear what they're saying to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I feel like a lot of people, I've had people comment on my Instagram stuff and they're like, you're really cool, but X, Y, and Z. And there was a comment about my podcast as well. They're like, oh, you're such a cool person, but I suggest maybe trying to do this and that. And like, initially you feel a bit weird, like it hurts my feelings a little bit. And then I'm like, you know what? They're right. They're very right.
You need to be willing to take criticism from people. Sometimes, sometimes I've read it too. I've read comments and I've been like, man, who is this guy? And you sit there and think about it and you're like,
they're right.
Maybe they're right.
Yeah, no, maybe.
That's why your best bet is to not respond right away. You know, you just walk away from it.
Yeah.
And then like think about it. Does it make sense? Or does it work for you or not? If their advice is not right for you, then it's not right for you. If it is, then take it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the hardest thing to do, though. And normally I just don't reply to, I'm talking about not necessarily advice comments, but like mean comments. Yeah. Normally I just don't reply to them at all, and it's really hard not to. It takes a lot of in you. But I typically don't respond to them. Yeah. No, normally I don't, but it depends. It depends on the context. The majority of them I don't. But if I do, I've thought about the response. It's not just, you know.
The closest thing I do is a lot of times I'll try to hit if there's a love emoji, I'll love their comment.
Uh-huh.
And that's about it.
Yeah.
They know I've
done that too.
Whatever.
Yeah, I'll just hit them back with something nice to be like, you're horrible, but I'm nice. So
yeah.
What would you say? I mean, we've talked about it a little bit. What would your number one is hard, but what is your piece of advice for someone who's just starting out playing bass? What would you say to them?
I would say number one advice would be have fun with it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say make sure that you're going back to the Victor Wooten, it's called playing music. So make sure it's fun for you and you want to do it. Keep an open mind. And just realize that, like, you know, music is awesome and it's great. Like, I feel super happy that I get to play music for a living, which is awesome. But there's other people out there that aren't musicians that do just as amazing stuff. So don't get too caught up in yourself.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that.
So, you know, stay humble.
Yeah. Number one, stay humble. Well, not necessarily number one. I think you mentioned this a little bit earlier about, you know, wanting to hopefully focus more on your band and stuff. But what is a goal that you're working towards right now? Are there any projects that you have going that you are currently working on?
My band, Local 518, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to really book for them this year, get more busy with more bookings. So, yeah, that's what I'm trying. I'm just wanting, you know, but right now we got so many gigs with Pat coming up in a few months. So after that sometime, we'll probably try to start booking more shows with my band for next year. Probably 2024.
Oh, nice. So more shows and teaching students.
Yeah, there you go.
Got it. Okay, to choose a song that was your soundtrack to success to tie to the title of this podcast, what would it be? This could be success that you've experienced or success that you're yet to experience, because we're all still working on it. Do you have a song in mind? Yeah, it can be your own song if you like.
It could be a Victor Wooten song. I got a song called Sense of Urgency from my second album. It's called Sense of Urgency.
Nice.
So, yeah, and I feel like sometimes a sense of urgency is important if you're trying to be successful.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
No, I love that.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. That's a good question, though. I don't really have the best answer for it, but that's the closest answer I can give you.
Yeah, it's fine. I always catch people off guard with that question, because it's the question I ask everyone, just to like end it off and like tie to the title of the podcast. So that's everything that I have for you today. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, no, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
In times of economic uncertainty and chaos, your money means nothing. You may not even be able to get it from your bank or ATM. And the money you do have in the stock market will go down and down. What you can bank on is gold and silver. Gold and silver have been a reliable and trusted form of currency for thousands of years. Gold and silver have never been worth zero, and typically gold holds its value during economic turmoil. Call the Gold Hotline now and learn how to protect your money and your assets with gold and silver. And learn how to set up a new IRA or roll over your current one into a gold-backed IRA. Protect your money from the next market crash with gold and silver. Call now for your free gold guide.
800-557-7921. 800-557-7921. 800-557-7921. That's 800-557-7921.
If you served in the Marine Corps, by now you know about the contaminated water problem at Camp Lejeune. If you were stationed or worked at Camp Lejeune from 1953 to 1987, you probably have a lot of questions. We have some answers. You could be entitled to compensation. Billions of dollars are being allocated to pay for damages to anyone stationed at Camp Lejeune during that time. Unfortunately, it appears that officials may have known the contaminated water problem existed and did little to protect their men. The Semper Fi Code was not honored. If you or someone in your family has developed a serious illness, including various forms of cancer, call this Camp Lejeune legal support line right now. You can't turn back the clock and change what happened, but you can certainly call right now and learn your rights as a Marine. Here's the number.
800-485-5801. 800-485-5801. 800-485-5801. That's 800-485-5801.
Attention, those of you looking to go on a fun vacation and see the world on the cheap. Today, the U.S. dollar is worth even more in other countries, so there's never been a better time to travel outside the USA. The dollar is worth over $1.30 in Canadian dollars, and it's the same for Australia. You can fly there today and have fun and maximize your travel dollar. Your U.S. dollar is worth over $3 in Brazilian reals, and it's worth over $18 in Mexican pesos. Plus, in Argentina, it's worth over $27 in Argentine pesos. Just think of the bargains you'll get. And the way you get the cheapest airfare to any destination is by calling Tickets That Cheap. Save up to 75% on your foreign vacation tickets. Don't wait. Call now. 800-914-5288. 800-914-5288. 800-914-5288. That's 800-914-5288.